kindness. We're going to return to our review of Paul's letters, and particularly his letter to the Galatians, as I had shared in yesterday's program. We began this by focusing on Paul's most important declaration. He wrote, "Because to the degree that out of tasks and activities of the Torah, they exist under a curse, which a supernatural power deploys when he wishes to invoke harm by promoting evil, doing what is accursed, denounced, and detested. For it has been written that, to become accursed, to become abhorrent and repugnant, everyone who does not remain in all that has been written in the scroll of the Torah, to do them." Paul's implication was that the Torah was a curse, and that the Torah itself acknowledged that it was a curse, because anyone who attempts to do the Torah is cursed by the Torah. Now, that's not what the Torah says. The Torah actually reads, in that section he's quoting, Devarim 27:26, it actually reads, "Invoking harm upon oneself is whoever relationally is not established by the words of this Torah." So, God's declaration is the antithesis of what Paul stated. That those who are established by the Torah are the ones who are benefiting themselves. Those who are not established by the Torah are the ones who are harming themselves. All right, Paul quoted a line that completely destroys the basis of Pauline doctrine, twisting it, convoluting it, misquoting it, to create the illusion that he said just the opposite. And the victims of religion, including the scholars and the theologians, don't even bother, not one, to say, wait a minute, he misquoted that line. God isn't saying that those who attempt to act upon the Torah are cursed. He said just the opposite. I mean, it would take 15 minutes of their time to make the comparison. They know what line he was quoting. And yet there isn't a Christian theologian, there isn't a Christian scholar, there isn't a Christian pastor that will point out that their guy lied. That their guy misquoted God to create the impression of the opposite of what God said was true to support his desire to nullify the Torah. And if you're a Christian, if you've been hoodwinked by your religion under these circumstances, you should be angry. Not at me for being willing to tell you that Paul lied, because that's obvious. You should be mad at your pastor. You should be mad at the Christian authors and theologians. You should be mad at Paul for deliberately hoodwinking you. You should even be mad at yourself for falling prey to it, for not caring enough about your own soul to take the 15 minutes that would be required to see if, in fact, God actually said that the Torah is a curse. And then when you find that what he said is the opposite, that the Torah is the solution to keep from being harmed, to walk away from the religion that is based upon a lie. Yahweh just said that we harm ourselves when we are not established and restored by the words which comprise his Torah, approaching him by acting upon them. Christianity is torn asunder by this very statement, a position which cannot be refuted without calling God himself a liar. The very statement Paul misquoted to establish his religion destroys it. That's why I say it's impossible to be an informed and rational Christian. The very God who Christians claim inspired Paul wrote the opposite of what Paul claims. You cannot be informed, which means to know this, and be logical, rational, and remain a Christian under these circumstances. The Torah verse, shall mangled in Galatians, undermines the most fundamental aspect of the Christian religion, of faith in its gospel and grace, as well as Paulos' own position, because it obliterates the idea that the Torah is passé. But even if observing the Torah wasn't presented as the lone means for becoming restored and established, as God just stated in Devarim, in Deuteronomy, in the Torah, if the Almighty was actually a capricious prankster, and if his Torah was really a curse, as Paul and others have claimed, then citing it as evidence would be irrational, because nothing God said could be trusted. There is no way to win here. For Christianity, Paul engaged in a lose-lose game, with billions of souls being lost as a consequence. The entire world ought to hate this man, just as God does. Christian apologists, steeped as they are in Pauline doctrine, will say that the Torah isn't a pick-and-choose sort of a thing, and that to be redeemed and to be righteous, a person would have to do everything the Torah requires all of the time, or else, they say, they would be cursed by it, judged and condemned. But that's not the message conveyed in the Devarim passage or anywhere else. It's not the message conveyed by Yahusha. It's not the message conveyed by Yahweh. Yahweh never makes that claim. He presents the Torah as the means to liberate us. He presents the Torah as the exclusive means to vindicate us. He presents the Torah as the means to adopt us and to save us. And the only means to accomplish these things. God knows that we are not perfect. He didn't create the Torah for perfect people. He provided his Torah as guidance, as instructions, so that the imperfect and flawed, like you and me, can be made to appear perfect by what he has done, through what he has promised. And yet Paul has attempted to neuter the Torah and to sever the relationship between God's testimony and the Messiah, rejecting the Torah's covenant and plan of salvation. Most Christians are unaware of the Torah's redemptive properties. As a result of Paul's epistles, Christians don't realize that when Yahusha said, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life, that his way and his definition of the truth were both found in the Torah. And that is why, in the midst of his instructions on the Mount, he called the Torah the narrow path to life. He said, it was by fulfilling Pesach, unyeasted bread, and firstborn children, that Yahusha honored the promises Yahweh had made in his Torah to make us immortal on Pesach, Passover, and perfect on matzah, unyeasted bread, so that he could adopt us into his family the next day during Bikurim, first fruits, firstborn children. But by severing these connections, by disassociating Yahusha from Yahweh's word, the Messiah's life, his testimony, and his sacrifices become as meaningless as the faith that Christians place in their characterization of them. Now, moving on to Saul's next thought, as it is found and recorded in the Nestle Allen Greek New Testament 27th edition with McReynolds English interlinear, they write, but that in law no one is made right along the God, clear because the right from trust will live. Now, it's not well written, obviously, but let's consider these words amplified, with the Greek text considered. And what we find instead is, but because with the Torah absolutely no one is vindicated or justified by the God, and that becomes evidence because those who are correct, righteous, and proper out of faith will live. We have the essence of Pauline doctrine right there. Bold, blunt, and undeniable. It's a choice for Christians. He says, but because with the Torah, absolutely no one is vindicated or justified, that the Torah cannot save anyone, and that that's made evident because those who are righteous out of faith will live. Bull. Yahweh says exactly the opposite about his Torah. He says that the Torah is the means to restore souls. Look at Dod, the individual God says that he loves more than any other. Dod, the founder of Jerusalem. By the way, they found ancient citadel of Jerusalem that Dod initially captured. Muslims, of course, are having a conniption fit over it. Dod is a guy who had issues. Adultery was among them. Jealousy was among them. He had issues. But Dod loved the Torah. He studied the Torah. He understood the Torah. He knew that to observe the Torah was not to obey the Torah, but to understand it. To read it. Observe means to read the Torah so that you know what it says, and then you think about it and you come to understand it. Now, at the time that Dod lived and God told us that he was righteous, tzedak, vindicated, and justified, the Torah was all there was. And yet God says, that guy, Dod, David, he is righteous. So I guess God was lying, because the Torah can't save anyone. So it wasn't the Torah that saved the children of Yisrael from the religious and political and military economic corruption in Egypt. No, it wasn't the Torah. What saved them then? Are you saying that, of course he's saying here, that everyone prior to Paul writing this new fangled idea that people are justified by believing, that no one could be saved? You know, this means to tzedak, to vindicate us. The Hebrew word is tzedak. It means to make righteous, to vindicate, to make innocent, to make upright. Is found in the Torah. It is prescribed through these seven invitations that God has offered to call us out of the world so that we can meet with him. It is through those invitations that we are vindicated. But I have to stop my listeners right here. God's intent is not to vindicate. That's actually not even the Torah's primary purpose. God's primary purpose is to establish a family-oriented relationship with those who choose to be adopted into his covenant. That is his purpose. And then once individuals become his sons and daughters, it's his purpose to enrich their lives, to empower them, to perfect them, to guide them, to lead them. And one aspect of all of these benefits that Yahweh is focused on providing his children happens to be salvation through the means of immortality and perfection. Salvation is just simply one aspect of a byproduct of the covenant. And when you focus, as Paul is trying to do, on the selfishness of being saved as opposed to the benefits of being part of God's family, you miss everything. You know, it's the whole thing is buzzed by you, and you missed it. If God's purpose was to save people that don't even know him, that have no interest in knowing him, that won't even bother to read his instructions, his fatherly guidance, that would be stupid. I mean, why spend eternity with somebody who in the present life isn't even interested in getting to know you as you are, who does have no interest in the means that you have provided at great personal sacrifice to facilitate a relationship and to enrich his children? What's the point? And so the very first thing you've got to understand is that Paul's entire focus was upside down. The purpose of the Torah isn't to save, although it provides salvation. The purpose of the Torah is to enable us through God's invitation to be part of his covenant family. And then salvation is one of many aspects of the benefits that God provides to his children. But these aspects are all provided by a very specific plan that Yahweh articulated. And this idea that no one is justified through the Torah would make Yahusha a liar. It would make Yahweh a liar. They said exactly the opposite. Now think about this for a moment. That the copious, the well-documented presentation of Yahweh's testimony in the Torah as part of the very process of saving the children of Israel from religion and politics in Egypt has to be completely discarded. And the new solution is to say what God said originally, what he conveyed in writing, what he spoke personally to the children of Israel while he was in the process of saving them, was totally incompetent. That he was incompetent, and that plan is totally impotent. That what God was saying is just a pile of lies that cannot be believed and is completely incapable of doing what he claims. But the solution is for you to believe. Believe what? You can't believe the God because he just said that the God's promises aren't credible. Believe what? Well, since you can't believe the testimony of the God that he claims is inspiring him, who then are you supposed to believe to be saved? That leaves you just with one option, Paul. So, are you saved if you believe Paul? Or are you saved when you follow Yahweh's Torah guidance? Those are the questions. And is it possible that a man who claimed to be inspired by the God who authored the Torah and who enabled that plan could be credible when he contradicts the very God that he claims inspired him? If you can't believe God, why would you believe this man? It's absolutely senseless. And yet there are billions of people alive today who don't realize it. Bumped up considerably in the King James, Paul sounds a bit more eloquent, albeit no more rational. King James reads, "But that no man is justified by the law in the sight of God, it is evident, for the just shall live by faith." Now, so the very God that is the author of this Torah, we won't use law since Torah does not mean law, and that nomos should not be translated law. Nomos, every time that it appears in the Septuagint, which is a Greek translation of the Hebrew text, uses nomos to translate Torah. So, since nomos is always used as a translation for Torah, we ought to replace nomo with Torah when we are trying to translate the Greek text into English. This isn't rocket scientists here. Just do a little homework, you know, do a little study and tell the truth. And when you're doing that, by the way, then look up the word Torah. Find out when God uses it and examine each of the first half a dozen times that Yahweh himself deploys the term Torah to describe what he is doing. And then take a little moment and say, you know, the first time, doesn't God say that it's based upon the verb Yara? And doesn't Yara mean source from which teaching, guidance, instruction, and direction flows? Now, it's not tough to make that connection. Then look at all of the roots of Torah. Come to understand what they mean. Come to understand how Yahweh uses Torah as a verb in addition to a noun. And when he uses it as a verb, it always is in the context with him teaching us something, guiding us as our Father. It's not difficult. This is only hard if you're hard-headed. It's only perplexing if you're religious. But how would the God who authored the Torah as his means of teaching us tell us that no one can be justified by his teaching? It's not even remotely rational. I mean, only a religious nincompoop could believe that. Updated for modern sensibilities, the New Living Translation passage reads, "So it is clear that no one can be made right with God by trying to keep the law. For the scriptures say, it is through faith that the righteous person has life." The scriptures don't say that. And it isn't clear that no one can be made right with God by trying to keep his Torah. There is no application, by the way, of the concept of keep ever associated with the Torah. Nope. There's no concept of obey ever associated with the Torah in the Torah, nor in the prophets, nor in the Psalms. That too is a religious lie. Yahweh uses three words in association with his Torah. By far, the overwhelming preponderance of the time, Yahweh uses the term shamar in association with the Torah. The Torah is a written text, according to Yahweh, and he tells us to shamar, which is to observe it. Now, I may not be the smartest guy on the planet, but if somebody gave you a written text and asked you to observe it, what is the one way you could observe the written text? Read it. Is reading it the only way that you can actually follow the instruction of observing the written text of the Torah? It is. There is no other way to apply the concept of observation to a written document other than to read it. To read something is not to keep it. The second most common reference to the Torah by Yahweh when he applies an action to it is the verb shama. Shama is the verb that the King James and others will translate. They won't translate. They will change to obey. But shama doesn't mean obey. It means to listen. That's all it means, to listen. Now, if someone gave you a written text comprised of words and encouraged you to listen to what they said through these words, how would you go about doing that? I know for some of you out there who may still be religious, this is a really complicated, difficult question because you have been beguiled into believing that God wants you to keep and obey, or did and gave up on that idea. And since he was incapable of saving you through his words, that he empowered Paul, who by his own definition was insane and demon-possessed and was murderous, to come up with a plan since God couldn't come up with a plan that worked. But if I were to give you a written text and I would say, I would like you to listen to what I have said here, How would you go about doing that? Would you recite the words? So that with your eyes, you're reading the words, with your mouth, you're pronouncing the words, so you can listen to what the words say? Is there any other way? Of course not. On occasion, and it's rare, but it does occur. It probably occurs a dozen times. That after encouraging us to read, observe the written text, after encouraging us to recite, to listen to the written text of the Torah, God will encourage us to asha, to act upon what we have read, to engage based upon what we have heard and seen. That's it. There is no Hebrew word for obey. There really isn't a Hebrew word for the concept of keep in the sense of keep doing something in compliance with a law. And God never implies any of those things. So it cannot be clear that no one can be made right with God by trying to keep the law. God never asks us to keep the law. But he does tell us that the means to being, to knowing who he is, that the means to understanding what he's offering, that the means to engage in the covenant and the means to receive the benefits of that covenant is to observe what he has written, which is to read it, and to listen to what he has to say, which is to recite it, and then act upon it. That's the only way to become part of Yahweh's family, the only way to receive the benefits, one of which includes our salvation. And the scriptures do not say it is through faith that the righteous person shall live. The second time now, Paul has quoted a passage where he has misquoted it. It's interesting, of course, that the passage that Paul has misquoted here was written about Paul. He quoted Chabaouk. That's the man's real name. I'm sure that unless you were a member of Yahweh's covenant family, you have never heard of a man named Chabaouk or a book named Chabaouk. In fact, even if I say the name that has been corrupted to, Habakkuk, that many of you don't even know that there's a book called Habakkuk among the Torah prophets and Psalms. But yet there is. And it was written expressly about Paul, calling him out by name. And yet Paul was toying with his audience to the point that he misquoted a statement in this very book in which Yahweh calls him out by name to say that he's the plague of death, to beguile those who would believe him into believing that the Torah had been annulled, that the Torah was mean, that it enslaved, that it was of the flesh, that it could never save anyone. Yes, this time, Paul misquoted a line in the prophetic revelation that Yahweh provided for all of us so that we would begin to question Paul and to realize that he was the plague of death. Paul's first point was anything but clear, because he cited a passage which contradicted his premise. But more telling still, the scriptures don't say anything about faith, much less one's belief leading to becoming just or righteous. Therefore, both positions are illogical. Even if one was justified by the Torah, that would still not infer that the just and righteous shall live by faith. I should say, if no one is justified by the Torah, that would not infer that the just and righteous live by faith. It's like saying that red wagons don't work, so it's evident we should put our faith in blue tricycles. mean, if I say it that way, you're right. Oh, that's stupid. Those things aren't related. But this comment Paul just made isn't related. One thing does not lead to the other. There's no rational or logical connection between them. Rather than cause and consequence, these ideas are wholly unrelated. More to the point, if God's Torah, his foundational testimony to humankind, cannot be relied upon, in whom are we to express our faith? As I had previously mentioned, the scriptures do not say that it is through faith that a righteous person has life. The passage Shaul truncated actually reads, pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. His soul is not right nor straightforward in him. So, through trust and reliance, by being firmly established and upheld, by that which is dependable and truthful, those who are upright and vindicated shall live. Chabaouk 2:4. In the last 6 minutes after the commercial break, we will continue to implicate Paul and free you from his faith. It is absolutely true. The Torah and prophets do not say that it is faith, that it is true faith, that the righteous person has life. Yahweh actually inspired Chabaouk, Habakkuk, to write, pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. His soul is not right or straightforward in him. So it is through trust and reliance, by being firmly established and upheld by that which is dependable and truthful, those who are upright and vindicated shall live. It's the opposite of what Paul said once again. And who is this puffed up individual? Whose soul is not right or straightforward in him? Who is using convoluted reasoning? Paul? You know, it's almost breathtaking in its audacity. And this time, the biggest issue isn't just the inaccurate or grotesquely inappropriate nature of Paul's citation, where he has once again misrepresented Yahweh's intent by removing and twisting a snippet of what God said. What's amazing is that Yahweh is specifically warning us about Shaul, which is Paul's given name. And so by quoting it, Paul is taunting his audience, arrogantly inferring that those foolish enough to fall for rhetoric aren't sufficiently resourceful or rational to analyze that God is telling us to trust him, not Shaul. In the third chapter of this book called Questioning Paul that we are reviewing and augmenting it through this program, we will consider the entirety of Chabaouk, the first chapter, the second, and go into the third, reviewing everything God had to say in context so that you would know for certain that God was telling us that it is Paul, Shaul, who is the one that is arrogantly puffed up with pride, and that the antidote for the beguiling poison of Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament, is his testimony. And when it is known and understood, and based upon that knowledge and understanding, you can trust and rely, then you will be freed from that curse. So here's some highlights, anyway, of that particular statement. As I say, we will get into it in great detail later, but consider this introduction to it at least enlightening at this point. God says, upon my requirements and responsibilities. Yes, God has requirements. When you make promises and you are trustworthy and dependable, you have established a requirement for yourself. And within the covenant itself, which is the means to vindication, no one is saved that isn't first part of the covenant. There are five requirements as part of the covenant. So God has responsibilities to honor his promises, particularly the five benefits of the covenant. And the covenant itself has requirements that we need to embrace if we're going to be part of God's family. Upon my requirements and my responsibilities, I have decided that I will literally and continually stand. And I will choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. God says, I've got requirements in my covenant. I've got responsibilities to honor my promises. And I'm going to always stand upon this reality. I'm going to present myself at the place where I can protect and fortify what I have promised through this covenant. So then, I will be on the lookout. God speaking in first person here. In order to see what he will say about me. Observing how he will question me. But then, how can I be expected to change my attitude, my thinking, and my response concerning my disapproving rebuke? God says somebody is going to question him. Someone is going to say that God is changing his plan. And God says, I'm going to be on the lookout for that guy. The pronoun he was third person, masculine, singular. I'm going to be on the lookout for that guy. And then once we see that he is saying that I'm changing my thinking, that I'm changing my outlook, then how is it even remotely possible that I'm not going to disapprove of him and what he has to say? And he's speaking of the author of half of the Christian New Testament. We'll be back with you tomorrow. May God bless.